This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week number 587, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
On the 21st of April, 1865, 3:31 left Washington for Lincoln's last train ride.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 587. I'm Connor Kilpatrick, alongside my co-host Josh Flanagan.
Hi.
And Ron Richards.
Well, hey there, gentlemen.
Should be co-hosts, probably.
But we'll co-hosts. Co-hosts.
Next week's script. Are iFanboy.
Would you really call what Josh does as co-hosting?
Well, he's the talent. We are iFanboy, and we read a lot of comics. One of us picks their favorite book, called it the Pick of the Week. Josh, we don't offer health insurance here, so be careful.
Oh, I'm aware.
We talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick, and maybe sometimes some listener mail. It'll be fun. This was a fifth week, guys, so I didn't have a stack of books. I had a tiny, tiny little thing of books. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be some spoilers. Exercise some caution, you son of a bitch. Ron.
Yes.
Happy Pick of the Week.
So, it was the fifth week, which means that you get, you know, like DC had some annuals and all the other companies don't seem to really care about the fifth week aspect of it, but you just get less books. But I even still had some solid books that I enjoyed reading, you know, stuff we're not even talking about this week, you know, that
some other
didn't
kind
quite
of books
make it.
You never even heard of.
Well, no, but like Black Science came out, which is always fantastic, and you should be reading it. We're not talking about it specifically, but, you know, like Kill or Be Killed was awesome again, right? You know, the Guardians of the Galaxy, Mother Entropy little miniseries ended. That was great. You know, you had some very cool stuff from the DC side that we're going to be talking about. But it was one of those things that as I read through my whole – I ended up with like 17 or 18 books. And as I
how
went
is
through –
How is that possible?
I read a lot, Connor.
He doesn't know how to not read something.
There was a lot on the Marvel side, and there was a lot on the Image side. Those are mainly, you know, where it picked up for me. When I finished reading my books, I sat down, and the one that stuck with me the most was Deadpool number 31, which is not only a Secret Empire tie-in, but it takes place before the events of Secret Empire starting, which normally would be kind of annoying considering that we're on the third issue of the event and event books and crossovers and stuff like that. But I'm going to give Jerry Duggan and Matteo Loli on art credit that they nailed this book in a way that reminded me of how powerful a very large event book can be and how poignant moments can happen in those books and be done elegantly and be done with dignity and like give you a really good story. Essentially what happens in this book is that it takes place right before Secret Empire starts. And maybe I'm a little biased because Phil Coulson figures prominently in this comic, and I do watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I just finished watching the latest season, and so I've kind of got a little Phil Coulson on the brain. But basically, Phil Coulson figured it out, what was going on, that Cap wasn't who he was, Cap figured out that Phil knew who what was going on and calls Deadpool and says, I need you to take him out. And this issue tracks Wade Wilson as Deadpool and Phil Coulson as both two guys who grew up idolizing Captain America and will do whatever he says. And you see the path, the point in the path where the paths diverge. And, you know, and so basically this whole issue is a chase between Deadpool trying to track down Coulson and, you know, and chasing him to his final, you know, kind of finally where the final standoff happens. And Coulson's trying to, you know, explain to Deadpool, like, no, you're on the wrong, you know, you're on the wrong side. You got to listen to me. And Deadpool's like, no, you're on the wrong side. And he says, has anybody ever said that about Captain America and been right? And, you know, which is like that it distilled down what should make Secret Empire a great event. Right. And mm-hmm. in this one issue, like, and it just like the sound of the ball hitting the off the bat, you know, like it just did it. Right. And for a moment, I got really excited about this event. and I just thought that the dichotomy and the positioning between Deadpool and Phil Coulson as two Captain America acolytes, you know, like idolizers, really, you know, put it, you know, kind of put it in a great bit of perspective. It was just like it was awesome. I just great one shot, low on the humor. Like you expect Deadpool to be jokey and stuff like that. This is very serious, in fact. And then it ends with the, you know, kind of the poignancy of Deadpool kills Phil Coulson. So Coulson is now dead in the comics. So we have our second casualty of Secret Empire.
Spoiler.
That's like spoiler. We had a spoiler. We had a spoiler warning.
I thought he was like dead. He's an LMD in like the comics.
Well,
who knows? Who knows?
I haven't kept up exactly on what his status is, but he's has been alive and running around. But now Deadpool not only shot him, but then also blew up the building where he shot him just to make sure he's dead. And there's also a great kind of background commentary on Deadpool talking about way back. Remember when Marvel Now happened and Deadpool replaced Wolverine on the Unity Squad on the Uncanny Avengers, and explaining why Captain America drafted him for that, saying Wolverine was the one who could do the job and get it done without, you know, without it weighing on him or without dealing with the consequences. And now I need you to do that. Are you willing to step up? And this is kind of the moment where Deadpool kind of steps up, but he's stepping up, of course, on the wrong side. So
I'd like to point out, A, that the son of a bitch in a spoiler warning was a script bomb that I read like Ron Burgundy. And B, if I could go back in time 10 years or so and tell both you guys how often you would pick Deadpool's pick of the week, neither one of your younger selves would have believed it. You wouldn't have believed a lot of things going on right now in the world, but you definitely wouldn't have believed that Deadpool was so often picked.
Well, I was actually thinking, like, I haven't read it for a while, but when he started, like, every time we start to talk about it, like, there's an element of, like, yeah, I don't know how this happened.
Right.
But yes. Also, Jerry Duggan's been on it for a long time now. It's not a slotian amount of time, but it's, you know, it's a long time.
Yeah.
You know, and he does good work. And every once in a while, you know, there will definitely be one of those issues where you're like, oh, that really popped through. It's Jerry Duggan's a guy that puts out a lot of work. And so I don't think and a lot of it is fine, you know, so we don't talk about him so much in those terms. But he actually is part of sort of the next generation of guys who are working for Marvel and DC who are pretty good.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, he is, you know, socially tied, you know, he's friendly with Remender, sure, and Brubaker and like all those that kind of class of dudes. And I feel like he, of all the people at Marvel right now, mm-hmm, I think has a lot of writing experience that we don't even know about. He's been a television writer for years, yeah, you know, like he's been working in LA, and I think he's a really, really talented writer. But also he gets the spirit and the vision that the last generation of Marvel writers came from. Yep. And so I kind of see him as like a new generation with that vestige of the old. And so like that's why he gets it. And so like with Deadpool, you can make a lot of decisions. And I find myself really impressed by the decisions he makes. Like he can dial up the wacky and the dumb and the jokes and all stuff like that. But he, you know, much like the suicide issue a few months back and several other times where I've, you know, raved about Deadpool, he changes the tone when appropriate and then nails it, like sticks the landing. And this one, you know, this is a single issue. You could read this not knowing anything going on in Deadpool's book. You could read this not knowing anything going on with Secret Empire, maybe just a little bit that you know that Cap is a Nazi. But I know he's not a Nazi. I was baiting Connor there to correct me.
He didn't take the bait.
They're not.
But you know, if you knew the overarching thing of Secret Empire, but you weren't signed up for it, you could read this book and get the weight of what the schism is here, of what's going on with this event, and then of course feel for you know, feel for the loss of a character who is beloved in terms of in Phil Coulson, who I still think, you know, I still think is
beloved.
I hold a special place in my heart for Phil Coulson.
He was beloved, and then the show took all the specialness. He stopped being in the movies, and just I wouldn't say he's beloved. He's not holding that place. It's a better gig for Clark. What's his name?
Clark Gregg.
It's a better gig for him, obviously, but the character's no longer as special as he was before.
Yeah. Do you watch S.H.I.E.L.D. or am I the only one who still
stopped watching it? But the point is,
it was really good this season, by the way.
When he showed up on screen, people loved it. Now he's just the guy on the TV show that nobody watches. Anyway,
I don't feel like anybody gets too much of a good thing anymore. They just always want more. I mean, that's how I feel, but I don't feel like that's.
Yeah.
What this reminds me of is when the Giffen and DeMatteis Justice League, which was essentially a vaudeville sitcom.
Would do a
serious issue, and that would make the serious issue even more impactful because the tone would change so wildly. I still remember when Despero showed up and killed a bunch of people, and how shocking that was because you're so used to it being a vaudeville sitcom, and suddenly people are dying, and the tone changes, and it was very impactful for me as a kid. And if you can navigate that tonal shift and not have it feel like whiplash, do you remember? A while back, there was that Paul Cornell miniseries about the British Batman Robin.
Yes.
And it started off really silly, and by the end, it was really serious. And we talked about how masterfully he had done that arc. When you can do that.
Knight and Squire.
When you can subvert expectations and make something that we thought was silly be really serious and have the changeover make it even more serious, you really are a talented writer. And I think, obviously, Jared Duggan is one.
Yeah, no, and just little devices that you do so well in comics, you know, like there's the page I mentioned, there are two pages that mirror each other where you've got young Deadpool sitting on a bed and the narration box says, "I grew up idolizing Captain America," and then you see a couple of panels kind of summing up their relationship, them fighting and then them teaming up and shaking hands and that sort of thing. And then later in the book, you get the same thing but flipped on the other, like in the opposite direction, but you get Phil Coulson saying, "I grew up idolizing Captain America," and there's a young Phil in bed and they're both holding like a magazine of Captain America, and there's a great panel of young Phil Coulson, S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, standing next to Cap with like a big smile on his face. And like Matteo Loli really got across the emotions that can come across, that idea of idolization and building a career, you know, with someone and then dealing with something that is like what is going on in Secret Empire, which feels like a betrayal and feels like, you know, kind of what you thought you could depend on wasn't what you could depend on. And I think that's was the spirit of what's trying to go on with Secret Empire. Whether or not that's happening or not, we can talk about later in this episode.
Can we skip to that issue as we move on to the next thing? Because I don't have a whole lot.
Sure, it makes
sense.
I think. Yeah, it makes sense. I should have done that. I should have anticipated that.
So I stuck Secret Empire 3 on here because at the end of this issue, I was like, "This is batshit," and I like it. There was not a qualification there. I don't like any of the other things that are going on around it, but with this issue specifically, I was like, "You know what? I'm in."
Yeah.
Because I think Nick Spencer's doing a good job with this for what it is, and a lot of people don't like what it is, and that's a problem with it. The other factor to that is that for all of the things we've had before this, it was this artist and this artist and this artist, and now we've had Andrea Sorrentino at least twice in a row, maybe three.
Twice in a row.
And that is the key to making this work for me, is that there's a consistency. And that came through. I was like, this works because we've gone from one part to the next and there wasn't a change, so we have continuity, and not in the comic book sense, but in this thing going on.
And I like that you've got Rod Reese doing whatever is going on with this other Steve Rogers with the beard, you know, like, so it's a different story that are folded into each other. And if that's what they need to do to have two artists on one book to maintain that consistency, that's fine. Just give me that consistency.
Yep. Well, the question would be then why was that number one different artist then?
I have no idea. Yeah. Yeah, that's
why not just do Andrea Sorrentino the whole time?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
scheduling, who knows? Who knows? When Steve McNiven says, "Yes, I can do one issue," you don't say no.
You do?
No, I think that's the opinion at Marvel, at least. But who knows? Maybe it was because Sorrentino was also doing Old Man Logan. So maybe it was, you know, kind of a scheduling kind of thing. Or no, he wasn't doing Old Man Logan. It's Eric Nguyen did Old Man Logan. So I'm wrong. I don't even know what I'm talking about then. But yeah, no, I'm with you, Josh, on the Secret Empire main book. Like, yes. I'm reading very little. Basically, I'm taking as I have been doing for many years now, when one of these line-wide events happen, I read the books I read, and I very rarely read anything else. Mm-hmm. And I read the main book. And so I haven't gone out of my way to read other Secret Empire stuff or to go all, you know, go all in and read every little bit or whatever, but I'm reading the main book, and you're right, it's batshit crazy, and you know how much I love batshit crazy. So,
yeah, it's really it feel like he's taken a lot from how Bendis does something, but taken out a lot of the Bendis isms that we know really well. Like, it feels like that. The characters feel familiar. He's worked with a lot of these characters for a while. Sam Wilson is in this, and Sam Wilson has changed from when he was with that, but it's a line that we can see. There's this Tony Stark AI that walks around like a man in this. You know, Steve Rogers is a character, and there's all these other people coming in and out of it, and it's interesting.
Yeah, there's actually a great scene, because the whole premise of Secret Empire is that Steve was able to get the shield around Earth and block Captain Marvel and the Guardians of the Galaxy and everybody else out of Earth, mm-hmm. right? And then at the same, I'm not quite sure why New York City is captured in a Dark Force bubble. I guess to keep the heroes in New York there. But anyway,
who knows? And it's batshit.
Who knows? Yeah, it's batshit, exactly. But so there's a nice little scene of Peter Quill going to all of the various alien races leaders, explaining yep. that Earth is in trouble and they need their help, and they all basically just laugh him out of the room. And I thought that was well done.
Yep.
Because that's realistic. It's like you expect the Badoon to help you after all these years, you know, like, or the Skrulls, right? but he had to try. I just like how it's out there and playing with so much stuff in the Marvel space that is just, you know, that is just wacky. So
yep, there's a lot here, and it's fun.
Yeah, so well, I'm glad you're enjoying it. It's fun. Yeah. It's been a long time since you've enjoyed a straight up Marvel, you know, kind of event book type thing. So. Sure.
And speaking of enjoying, because it was a light week, I was trying to find stuff to read. I picked up Wonder Woman Annual 1, and about like a third of the way through it, I was like, oh, this is actually pretty good. Because I don't expect much. I think I read the Trinity Annual too, and I didn't like that at all. There's basically, I think it's three short stories. And you've got
three or four shorts, yeah.
Yeah, and you've got Rucka and Nicola Scott on the first one, which is sort of a little flashback to how Batman and Superman met Wonder Woman, and it's fun.
But it doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't matter. That was the part. I didn't really make much of a note of that one. It was as we get into the further ones, you have this weird King Shark story by a writer named Vita Ayala, who I've never heard of, but then an artist named Claire Rowe, who's like, I don't know, like there's an Eduardo Risso bit to it. It's beautiful art with Jordi Belair coloring it. I was blown away by the art and this sort of interesting story with her and King Shark, and King Shark's ridiculous and funny. You get to this sort of last one, and you've got another story from Michael Moreci with art by Stephanie Hans that also like looked completely different, but it was kind of interesting and fun, and just a bunch of little short stories. What was the last one? Oh, David LaFuente, and that was the last one. I was like, oh, David LaFuente's back doing his LaFuenteism on Wonder Woman. She fights a big monster and then finds out that, you know, if you apply a little bit of love, then you can give the monster over to Dinosaur Island and then he'll be happy. But it was just like an unexpected little treat that was in there.
Art tour de force for this story.
Yeah, I mean the art in this whole book was fantastic, and this was, I mean, close to being pick of the week. And the only thing that made it fall short for me is that it just lacked any story lacked any depth.
Sure.
Like they were just all kind of like they were just like quick short stories, which are nice and fun. This is perfect. Like someone walking out of the Wonder Woman movie this weekend.
I thought that.
Pick this up. That's perfect.
Like there's like, very job. Rarely that a movie is going to come out that the comic book in there is a really good choice for them to get, and this one is. Because it's just a couple of, you know, it's not in the middle of a whole thing. It wasn't like, you know, if Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chang's book was still out, you know, that would have been terrible for them.
This is the right book. It gives you a bunch of little tastes of Wonder Woman's stories and adventures and kind of where she is, and gives you different tones and gives you different kind of things. You got Batman and Superman in that main story, which I thought was great, but like I wanted 10 more pages of that.
Yeah.
It was great, except why is Superman wearing his new costume in this story of when they first met? And why is he not young Superman? Why is he Clark Kent in the blue suit with the glasses with Lois Lane as a reporter when he should have been a young blogger wearing jeans? And
Hey, Josh, who invited the nerd?
I know. Well, the good thing about all of that being really confusing that I've completely lost track of it, so I don't even notice it anymore.
Once I said that, it was great. Nicola Scott art was wonderful, and Greg Rucka writing all three of them was great. It just was like, if you want to do a story, just do it. It doesn't have to be when they met. Just do a story with the three of them. If you want to do it now,
Well, but, I mean, that was the story. That's, I mean, that was probably the whole pitch. This is when they met. And
I get that, but then you got to draw it correctly.
I don't care.
I don't care. No, don't care, but that
means, like, if you're going to have continuity, then just draw the right costume.
They clearly don't.
Yeah.
This is all talking about
if they've given up on
Listen, it's the button. It's all about the button here.
Oh, the button fixes everything. It's the force.
We can just blame everything on Dr. Manhattan now.
Yep.
So what I don't think the patron extremists planned on happening was that we would insert Judge Dredd Funko Universe into the rundown separate from them. Didn't even win this week. The vote. We'll get to that later. But as we discovered last week when we read Strawberry Shortcake Funko Universe, there's one more issue, and it's written by John Layman, who wrote Chew, one of our three of our favorite books in the last 20 years. And
well, that's a thing. So after the Funko, I don't know what call it last week, the Funko insurgency, I was going to call it the Funko disaster last week. Yeah. We were talking about the Funko books, and then we're like, oh, the next one is Judge Dredd. I went, oh, it's written by John Layman. Oh, and so I picked it up, and yeah, guess what? I kind of enjoyed this.
You know what? Who is this for? I'm just kidding. I thought it was really enjoyable. I like there was a little nod to our friend Mike Norton in Pugs.
Yeah, it was. Yep.
It was. I mean, I don't think there's a huge audience for this kind of thing, but I was curious how you were going to mesh these things.
Well, here's the thing about it is that if you're going to do this kind of thing, like what I didn't get about Funko Strawberry Shortcake was that it was a Strawberry Shortcake story just drawn in as if they were all Funko dolls, right? Like the Funko style, right? And if you had taken that story and drawn it like a Strawberry Shortcake story, it would have been fine, right? But in this particular case, the juxtaposition between the grim and gritty universe of Judge Dredd and the adorable cuteness of Funko dolls, right? You butt those two up against each other, and then you throw in John Layman, who, let's be honest, is a funny guy, and you do it in a, you know, kind of a cutesy Chris Eliopoulos, Scotty Young hybrid, you know, kind of a Jacob Chabot kind of style art approach. It hit the right notes in the right times, right? So and also this is $4.99. It wasn't $5.99, so a little cheaper. There were three short stories in this.
No, $4.99 was the price of the other one.
Oh, I thought it was $5.99 last week.
$5.
Oh, okay, $5. Oh, got it, right. So it's still $4.99. Oh, well. But it's got three stories. Two were by Francesco Gaston and one by Troy Little. And as someone who, like, I'm not the biggest Judge Dredd fan in the world. Like, I really enjoy Judge Dredd.
In bites,
yeah. Like, I've read a lot of the old 2600 AD stuff. Don't read any of the Judge Dredd stuff from IDW. That stuff is, even Judge Dredd fans like, oh, no, that's not so good.
Did you mean 2000 AD?
2000 AD. I'm sorry. 2000. I messed that up with the Hacker Magazine 2600. I'm sorry. 2000 AD. I'm sorry. I'm tired.
Good explanation.
Thank you. Well, at least it's got some dessert. But, you know, you throw in the humor stuff, and then, you know, by the time I got to the end of in the middle story is the one with the dog named Norton and a pug, and it ends with the Judge Dredd and Pug Dredd and a little pug in the Judge Dredd costume. That almost had me. But then when you had the last story where the evil judge, you know, the dead dreads and stuff like that come, and they and it ends with the last line, the law doesn't run from hugs. I was just like, oh, they got me. They completely got me. And it's all about the imbalance between the cutesy, bright color humor and the grittiness of Judge Dredd. And so it worked. So.
And tell you what, making this three short stories instead of one long story, that's what made this work. Because if you had to read that for 22 pages, you'd be like, all right, get on with it.
See, I like this less than Strawberry Shortcake for that very reason.
Really?
Yeah. I kind of liked the Norton as a pug joke story, but then I found the rest of them kind of boring. I liked that I got into a full story with Strawberry Shortcake. I actually enjoyed I would put Strawberry Shortcake above Judge Dredd.
Well, and the thing about these books is that it's all about your connection to the property.
I have no connection to Strawberry Shortcake.
Right. Well, no. Right. But do you have any connection to Judge Dredd? You know, I mean,
I've seen the movies. I've read some Judge Dredd comics.
But are you a Judge Dredd? Like, do you know who Judge Death is and Judge Mortis and Judge Fear and all that stuff are?
Like, not intimately, like my best friends, but I mean, I've read their adventures.
Some of my best friends.
I thought Strawberry Shortcake was a better made comic, is what I'm saying. Not has nothing to do with the properties. So that's all.
Interesting. Well, as a fan of the property, so I enjoyed the scent.
What I want to know is if somebody out there is going to get mad and stop listening because of what Connor said.
Possibly.
Because.
Possibly.
We run that risk every week.
I
assume once a week somebody does.
There's a Strawberry Shortcake contingent. Just like when we found out there was a Scooby-Doo contingent, there was another weird one that there was also a contingent.
Oh, the one years ago, there was the Michael Jackson thing. Anyway.
Oh, well, that, yo, gee, yeah. I remember that one. He was a relative of mine, and I'm never following you again. Still a child molester. And
God. Anyway.
Save us from this dark turn.
Anyway, I was as surprised as Judge Dredd Funko as you were. So good job, John Layman. As far as I'm on the John Layman train recently. Between Eleanor and the Egret in this book, I'm liking his post Chew life here. Anyway, all right. Well,
his
this post Chew like
life is. You want to do this? Sure, sure. I'll do this.
This seems like a good as time as any to tell you guys again that you can go buy T-shirts for My Fanboy, which is brand new and fantastic. We want to thank all of our supporting patrons for helping us hit our goal, and we finally launched a T-shirt shop over at Threadless. You can go to ifanboy.threadless.com, where we've got several T-shirt designs for you. You can get the classic iFanboy logo T-shirt. You can get the a little glimpse into the world of the Pick of the Week recording with a great cartoon by Lars Brown on a nice white T-shirt. You can get the classic Herm shirt. And then, of course, our latest design, the ever-popular ratings shirt. And we've got more designs coming soon, so definitely bookmark ifanboy.threadless.com. And if you want to get on the action, want to get your shirt now, do it right now, because up until June 9th, you can get free shipping on orders over $45 in the U.S. or $80 on international orders. Saving shipping is always great. You can get them shipped to you for free. Thanks to our friends at Threadless for doing that for the free shipping. That's awesome. So get your T-shirts. Help support iFanboy. Show your pride. Wear your iFanboy shirt in pride. A couple people tweeted pictures of them wearing their shirts. Please do that. Continue doing it. Show off your new swag. We appreciate seeing you. We thank everybody for buying a T-shirt.
I wore my rating shirt to the movies last night.
Nice. Ratings.
Yeah, it's very comfortable.
But if you don't want a T-shirt, or you've got all the clothes you need, but you still want, you're like, how can I support iFanboy? You can go to ifanboy.com/support, where you can also click on Amazon and do your shopping. Let's say you want clothes that doesn't say iFanboy. Just click on the Amazon link on ifanboy.com/support and go buy clothes that don't say iFanboy. There you go. Problem solved. We get a little cut of that, not from you, but from Amazon directly. So you're just doing your shopping as normal. And then Amazon throws us a couple of cents our way, and we appreciate everybody who uses that. If you'd like to directly support us, you can click on the donate via PayPal button. And if you are looking for a tax shelter, or you need to move large sums of money, or are just an eccentric billionaire, this is the option for you. Or even if you're not an eccentric billionaire, but you're just like, hey guys, I like what you do. Here's 10 bucks. This is a great way to do it. And we thank everyone who does that. And finally, the best way to support iFanboy is by going to patreon.com/iFanboy, where you can become a supporting patron. I did the math, and about our patron base is the loyal, the true blooded iFanboys. We're about 4% of the people who listen to the show are iFanboy patrons. I think we could do better than that, folks. So go to patreon.com/iFanboy, become a patron today. You can do it for as low as $1 a month.
You get to 5% or I walk.
Listen, we've got quotas here. We've got goals. We need to double down on this Patreon thing, guys, I think. We are less than $600 away from our next goal, which will bring another podcast on a monthly basis where we talk about something other than comics, whether it's a movie or TV show or books or records or whatever, an all media podcast. But we need your help to do it. You can sign up for as low as $1 a month. If you sign up for $5 a month, which is just the cost of Starbucks now. Jeez, just
Or a Funko book.
Exactly. Save money on the next Funko book. Become a supporting patron. You can. These are the things you can do. You can. All patrons, any dollar amount, can vote on the patron pick. So you can make us read and talk about a book on the podcast. Be directly involved in this podcast. If you sign up at $5 or higher, not only do you get some cool swag and stuff like that, different levels. You can see it there. But you also get a dumb superpower here on the show. And we have quite the mighty backlog. And we will get to everybody at some point, or we will die trying. So go to patreon.com/iFanboy. We thank you for your support. Without you, we wouldn't be here. Let's get back to the comic books.
So Doctor Strange skipped an issue because we had to get to the tie-in book, and they hadn't finished number 20, which is Jason Aaron's farewell issue yet. So I downloaded this, and I was like, what is Dennis Hopeless doing in this? And then I realized what happened, and I was upset.
it really confused you. You didn't quite get it. I, for one, Doctor Strange, it's a Secret Empire tie-in book, but I read Doctor Strange, so I'll check it out anyway. But then I saw it was art by Nico Henrichon, and I was like, oh, I don't even care about the misnumbering. I want some Nico Henrichon. And it was wonderful. So
I wasn't upset. I wasn't confused or upset. I was sad it wasn't there. I wanted to wrap up the storyline. I wanted the final issue of Jason Aaron. That's all I'm saying.
You're still going to get it.
Fair enough.
I know. I just find it interesting when they skip an issue.
Doesn't happen a lot, but it is weird.
Right.
It's like you never do that in a TV show.
But for those who aren't aware why I was excited, that was Nico Henrichon. Nico Henrichon did the graphic novel Pride of Baghdad with Brian Cabon like 10 years ago. And I think he's an artist that I want to see more comics from. So.
Brian Cabon, who did a very good Doctor Strange miniseries.
Right, with Marcos Martin.
There you go. See? Yeah. It all comes together. It's all a thing. Yeah, it was good. I mean, like, I saw it and I was like, all right, Dennis Hopeless. He's going to be the guy who follows up Jason Aaron on that book. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get back into The Flash, so I got The Flash 23 because it was like a part one, and I was like, after the button, I was like, yeah, and Carmine DiGiamminzica is good, you know, and until he isn't drawing anymore, I really think this is a good Flash book, and what I'm wondering is, do I just not like The Flash enough to keep reading it forever?
Well, like,
but I'm right though. This is a good Flash book, right?
This is a good Flash book. Carmine DiGiamminico, I've enjoyed on this book, but he might not be the artist I go to illustrate a party.
I have to look now.
Right. Well, no, just in general, like he's really great at the speed and the motion and the friction, but the majority of this book was standing around talking to each other, and I don't think that was his best foot forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I would say this is the majority of the book. About page halfway through the book is when the action kicks in. Yeah. So,
I think it was only one page of the party.
I didn't really notice that so much. Obviously, we talked about the book is better when he's drawing it. But I like the mystery on the first page, which is basically in the future at the Flash Museum. Why is the Reverse Flash listed as Barry Allen's best friend? Yeah. So clearly something has happened. And so that means so the mystery. Plus, we're dealing with the button fallout as we see. The Reverse Flash is a dead body, although there's a glint of life in his eyes. And in the last page, spoiler alert, he's back alive again. And Hal Jordan shows up in his jacket, which I guess he only owns the one jacket.
Well, he's a flyboy. Always...
That's the jacket, though.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. I thought the...
Also, I don't think that's how that jacket actually looks.
Works.
he's got the furs, like giant lapels, but it's not like that.
I was excited to see a Flash Green Lantern crossover because that's one of the when I got into the Flash, I actually got into it in the late 90s in the middle of a Flash Green Lantern crossover. And I love we always talk about the Green Lantern Green Arrow kind of friendship and the hard traveling heroes and stuff like that. But sometimes you forget that there is a legacy of Flash Green Lantern team up. You know, kind of friendship there, and it's a different kind of friendship than the Green Arrow one. And so I'm glad that they're revisiting it because it's been a long time since we've seen that. In fact, I like Flash Green Lantern team up better than Flash Batman team up.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm just gonna go out and say it. This Wally West is a dick. He needs to shape up.
Yes, agreed.
That's
probably the story arc. Yeah, he does keep kicking. He showed up to the party.
Yeah, that's the story arc, yes.
All right, so Moon Knight number 14 was the last issue by Jeff Lemire and Greg Smallwood. And really great run. I just wanted to give them kind of a nod. It was a solid 14 issues with Greg Smallwood was joined by a bunch of different artists throughout the run. But I just really enjoyed this issue in, issue out, and it ended in a good point.
I can't wait to see what he does next. He's so good.
He's really good.
Really, really good.
Yeah, Smallwood. Greg Smallwood.
Did you guys read... I don't know why I'm laughing.
His name was Greg Smallwood.
Oh, I see. Did you guys read Black Road all the way through?
Yes.
I did.
Did we like the ending? Or was it just the thing that ended? Which is
I'm not sure what the point of this book was.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at with this. And it's funny because the subtitle on all the issues was a... what the fuck is his name? A Magnus the Black mystery. I don't know what the mystery was.
Yeah,
I feel like they solved it pretty early on.
There wasn't really a mystery. I thought it was just an odd choice, but I enjoyed it. I like Vikings. I like Viking stories. I've been watching the Vikings, catching up on the Viking show. The art was good, but at the end, I was like, I don't know what the point of this 10-issue arc was.
Well,
it basically was. It was a 10-issue story because we followed the same characters to the very end, and
there was a definite level of sort of like. we're going to lose to these Christians and our whole thing is going to go away, but we're going to fight a little in the middle and then we're going to get tired and not fight. This to me was the sort of like, there was a Brian Wood who I sort of used to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this kind of thing. Like this, it was very vague sort of endings and things like that. I think that happened a lot, but I like everything.
He's been on a super roll lately in the last couple of years. Oh, yeah. Everything, almost everything he's been doing has been really interesting and really good. This was really interesting and really good. I think it petered out about 4 issues ago.
I think you're
agreed.
Right.
Agreed.
No.
But what was good about it was fun. This could have been, I think he had 6 issues here in this 10-issue miniseries.
What's funny is that we're like, so Moon Knight 14 was Lemire's last issue on this. Black Road 10 was Brian Wood's last issue on this. And then the next book, Old Man Logan 24, was Lemire's last issue on that. We got a lot of last book. This fifth week ended a lot of things.
Of guys who we had on our show when we had a video show.
Yeah, exactly.
Sneaking these endings in like Friday Night News. Old Man Logan 24. I liked this last arc in which we basically Lemire ended on a little trip through Logan's history. The only thing I didn't like was the idea of having Old Man Logan in the present day was interesting for a while, but now it's like, okay.
Well, the problem is that this is Wolverine. Like, I really get the sense that they're never going back to Wolverine as we knew it. Like, he's going to be this gray-haired old Wolverine forever. And that bumps me.
Can't say never.
That's
because
They've still got Hugh Jackman under some kind of contract. So,
right, exactly. And the tie-in with the movie, and then you've also got, you know, X-23, or she's the new Wolverine, and she's wearing the yellow and the blue, and we're going to get Duster. Or
who knows what's going to happen coming out of the Generations event? But it just. You know, you'd think Lemire leaving would be a good time to wrap it up, but then, you know, next month there's Old Man Logan, and
yeah, they're keeping this book going. I mean, just because this ends Lemire's arc with 24 issue 25, and it starts a new arc. Who's right? I forget who the new team is, but
well, it's Deodato on art.
It was somebody good on writing, if I remember correctly.
Isn't 25? Doesn't that make it the highest numbered book at Marvel?
Yeah. No, I just Deadpool 31 our pick of the week this week.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there it is.
Old books.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the point of keeping it going is. Oh, Ed Brisson is writing it. He's also writing Iron Fist. Yeah,
sales.
I mean, yeah, sales.
It sells.
Well, you'd think bringing back, you know, quote unquote younger regular Logan, starting a Wolverine book would be a higher selling book than Old Man Logan. I don't think Old Man Logan's burning up the sales charts.
Agreed. Yeah. All right. Well,
they're keeping it going. So it's soon enough.
We're going to check into Star Wars Corner quickly with Star Wars Dr. Aphra number 7, which is the next issue in the event. What is it? The Citadel? What is Screaming Citadel?
Whatever.
Story arc.
Lady Vampire.
The Red Lantern Vampire Star Wars book. Kieran Gillen back in Dr. Aphra with art by Andrea Brocardo. And remember last time we talked about Star Wars where I was complaining about the photorealistic artists?
That's the story.
Yep. Thank you. You picked up on the same thing, right?
100%. So this guy who's doing cartooning, and it's their faces, but it isn't creepy. It's great. It's what should be done.
I don't know who this Andrea Brocardo guy is, but it had, or a woman. I mean, I don't know. It could be a man or a woman. But definitely more cartooning. More, you know, like that style, not photorealistic, but in no sense was I confused as to who Luke was or who Han was or who Leia was or, you know, or whomever. Like, he got the essence of the characters down. This is what I want Star Wars comics to look like.
Yep.
Do you remember a couple of years ago, Marvel started a lot of like Latin American artists showed up, and then for a while, it was a lot of guys from Spain. Now it's a lot of guys from Italy.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
It's like wherever C.B. Sabelski is this month. this is where the pipeline is, but there's, I think, you know, China. Andrea Sorrentino and Andrea Brocardo and there's another Carmine D. Well, that's DC, but still Carmine D. Domenico.
Yeah. Came from Marvel though.
Yeah, I think there's Matteo Loli in.
Yeah, Matteo Loli. I don't know where he's from.
Like Matteo Scalera. I mean,
yeah.
You got like 5 Italian artists, or at least of Italian descent, at least just this week in this book you're talking about.
Hey, amen, and it's a good lineage. Let me tell you, I'm supportive of it. No, but I just love, like, there were moments like in that first page where it's not quite imminent, but it reminded me of imminent on Star Wars, and I was just like, oh yes, and so I got very excited.
Totally
so,
the right more. Move on this. There's a zombie Gungan in this book.
Yes, I
on
saw
the
that
first page. I don't need Santa to be around at all anymore. She serves no purpose.
Agreed.
But it was fun having all the characters around and them interacting with the killer droids. And Dr. Aphra will break your heart. I just, sure again, will. This shit is batshit. Like, yep. I don't know who's letting him do it, but I'm going to stick with it as long as they do.
All right. So that takes us to the patrons pick. As we mentioned earlier, if you are a supporting patron at patreon.com/ifanboy, you get to vote every week in to make us read and then discuss a book here on the podcast. And this week we had was it a record number of votes? I mean, there was a lot of activity.
It was a record. It was well over a quarter of the patrons voted, which was great to see. And it was a tight race. I think the more people vote, the more interesting the race gets. I think, at the very end, we had the top four levels, sometimes there's ties, were all separated by four votes. And the book that won only won by two votes. It was the book that had the lead for the entire week, but the lead shrank until the very end, but it ended up being Cable number one from James Robinson and Carlos Pacheco as the patron pick.
And it's funny. I wonder what the motivation there is but I mean, I guess people are interested in this. I mean, it's the largest profile launch in the X-Men, you know, kind of relaunch this week. It's James Robinson, Cable, like it's all this sort of stuff. So I was surprised to see that it'd be the pick. That's what I'm trying to say.
I wasn't. It tends to be these number one relaunches. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about the book. For all of the interesting and innovative stuff that Nick Fury did, I thought this was like the opposite of that. This is like the most rote, uninteresting comic I've read in a while.
Wow. Tell us how you really feel.
I mean, it could be that I really just hate Cable. Yeah. And to me, he represents that entire era of X-Men that turned me off as a teenager. But I mean, it was fine. It was like the definition of down the middle of the road. Like it looked okay. Didn't look great. Didn't look bad. The story was okay. It wasn't great. It wasn't bad.
Right.
At the end of it, I know nothing about Cable. I couldn't even tell you what his powers are.
Well, here's the thing.
No one can.
Here's the thing,
the number one issue. You should be introducing these characters a little bit better than that, I think.
Here's the thing about it is, I enjoyed it, but I agree with you in that this is the slow burn James Robinson comic thing. Mm-hmm. Where nothing happened. Like, I don't know what's going on, what the scenario is, what the situation is. I like that he's got Cable traveling through time, because I always like the idea of Cable as a time traveler, and I love time travel stories and whatnot. So, this bounce to two different, you know, kind of locations and years and eras. But I don't know what he's chasing. I don't know what he's dealing with. So it's tough for me to get excited by this first issue, because there weren't a lot of breadcrumbs to tell me what the situation is.
And I have a lot of respect for Rob. He's one of my favorite writers. So I have a high standard for him. Like, right. Nick Fury, that's James Robinson I know and love. I don't like prescribing motivations, but this felt like his heart wasn't in it. But right.
Or he doesn't like some things people will mesh with right away, and some people have to find it a little bit. It's like, do you want to do Cable? All right, let's see how that goes. Like, I feel like it's more of that. I will tell you, like, I saw I had to read a Cable book and I was like, ugh. And then I kind of read it, and I did again, like, I don't even look a lot of the times. I think I saw the name before it started and I was like, all right, well, at least there'll be something here interesting that I can look for. And so, you know, you got a little samurai movie in the middle. There's a time traveling element that was kind of fun.
Western in the beginning. Yep, right?
That kind of worked for me. I thought it looked pretty good. It was fine, but I thought it was going to be awful.
But, well, that's good. That's good that that it was fine and not awful, and that's what you thought it would be. But, like, the thing that bothers me about it is that, like, that genre and, you know, doing that stuff, I like that. And what bothers me is that it leaned too much on me as the reader to be curious and excited about what's to come next. You know, like, it's like, I'm going to put this out here and just trust me. And I understand that we got, you know, like, readers get impatient and we have to trust the writer a little more and all this sort of stuff. But I need something more than what was in this book in order to hang on. And that's what kind of frustrated me about it.
I feel like that's the only reason that Cable, you know, books stick around, though, is that there's those people who are like, well, it's a Cable book.
Well, yeah, but I mean, here we are. It's a first issue, and what is the tone of this series? What is the adventure? What is the challenge? I don't know what that is, and I feel like in the first issue, I should know exactly what that is. But who knows?
I mean, Ron, to me, like, that's what Cable is to me. I'm like, I don't get it.
Yeah,
Ron, what is Cable's power?
He is telepathic and telekinetic and weaponry. He's very well trained and well all stuff like that. Mutant power is telepathy and telekinetics. He is the son of Jean Grey.
Or kinesis.
telekinesis, TK. So, but he also has a ton of tech, including time travel and all that sort of stuff. But those aren't powers. Those are technology.
He's like Batman, but with telekinesis and telepathy.
Yeah, big. But I think that it's less telepathy. The telepathy has come and gone. His main power has been telekinesis. But the interesting thing about it was that the telekinesis is what he was using to keep the techno-organic virus in his arm at bay.
And so is the techno-organic virus still a thing? And you've answered the question.
Yeah, and so basically what would happen is that his telekinesis was limited in its power set because he was constantly working on keeping the techno-organic virus at bay and keeping it from spreading with his telekinesis, and so therefore he could lift stuff, but he wasn't like crazy powerful with it. I don't know over the years how they
changed. It's not an X-Men story unless Ron can say techno-organic virus.
Can I just say, just from a completely crafty standpoint, the last page of like the hand, that's a really well-drawn hand and glove. It's just like I was.
It's also a great Smith song, Hand and Glove. So.
If there was another hand, it would be a great Elvis Costello song.
Is he still the son of Gene and Scott?
Yep. Okay. Yep. They didn't change that. So, all right. So ratings.
2.5.
I give it a solid 3.
3.
Sticking with it.
No.
Josh.
Maybe. Probably not, but if it's like a light week and if I notice it, I might check it out again.
And yes, I am.
Okay.
Because I read. I've read every Cable book. I'm going to read every Cable book.
And this is why you've got 18 comics on a fifth week.
Illustrating Josh's point earlier. All right. Well, so that was the book that the patrons made us read this week. And of course, now is the time where we're going to thank specifically a few patrons and give them superpowers. Connor, you are up first. Take it away.
So thanks to Jose A. De La Torre, who has polarized eyeballs.
What does that mean?
It means he doesn't need sunglasses.
Yeah, there's no glare off the water.
Is like he can change, they're polarized, and he can change the tint, so he doesn't need sunglasses.
So, Connor, just on a related note, did you buy sunglasses this week?
No.
Huh.
Okay.
No, I did not. Sure, there may or may not be a photograph on my desk of people wearing sunglasses.
Okay, fair enough.
But I can confirm or deny that, but he does not need them. He doesn't have to spend $120 bucks on some Ray-Bans. He can just tint his eyes.
Fair enough.
All right. There we go. Josh, you're up.
Eduardo Ramirez, never taken a lesson in his life, but he can instinctively play all woodwind instruments.
Oh, all right then.
Can't play, not a stringed instrument, not going to do that, not a percussionist, but if it's woodwind.
So if it's a clarinet, he's like, oh yeah, I got this.
There.
Yeah. What about a recorder?
I don't believe that has a reed in it. You need to have a reed to be a woodwind instrument.
Not a flute.
So no flute, no, that's and it's not a trumpet.
Listen, I confess I'm not an expert on woodwind instruments.
So Eduardo Ramirez is really good at the oboe.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. Cool. All right. Up next, we got Johnny Nelson, and his power, I can sum it up in 2 words, my friends.
Yeah.
French toast.
Continue.
Okay.
Okay. He can take any organic matter and turn it into a perfectly prepared piece of French toast.
Wow. All right. So he's
like, and the thing is, sometimes you get French toast that's a little soggy.
Or it's too fried
or whatever.
Like, no, it's piece of it French toast at a post wedding buffet last week.
Right. And you were probably in New Jersey at the time, weren't you? Right. They're known for their horrible French toast there. what he's able to do is he can take a head of lettuce and he just puts his hand over it and then light kind of comes out and then it's French toast.
Does he have a diabetes problem?
No.
French toast in and of itself is not sugary other than the bread. It would be the syrup you add, or if you put brown sugar in it.
Well, yeah, but you're not going to just eat the bread. That's lunatic behavior.
Well, no, he leaves the syruping and the powdered sugar and the toppings to you. What you want to do with the French toast, that's fine. How you want to add condiments, but you've got the base of the right fried, battered French toast.
I'm just saying, if I knew I could make the perfect French toast and I was like, at any given moment, I'd be eating a lot more French toast.
It's really good.
Yes. Smoothie, or I can turn this smoothie into the perfectly made French toast. You know.
Yeah.
To follow up, just by the way, there are two main types of woodland in, woodwind instruments. There's reed instruments or flute instruments. So the flute and recorder are woodwind instruments.
So he can play the recorder perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
He can,
yep.
He can go to my fifth grade class in 1986 and play. Actually, that was 86.
Smoke on the Water.
88. Scott Gokey's power is that he sees all spoken language as subtitles underneath the people speaking.
Okay.
Doesn't matter if he understands it or not. So on the one hand, he understands what everyone's saying at all times, because when someone is speaking, say, French, he didn't speak French, underneath them he'll see the English translation, but he also sees English under, so he's always seeing words, but he knows, at least he knows what's going on at all times.
So he can translate easily.
It's not that he translates, it's just that it appears before him. So yeah, right. He knows. Yeah.
All right, cool. Good.
All languages, all spoken languages, but not all right. Print. So newspaper, he's lost.
It's got, and some people get headaches when they read a lot. I imagine that he probably is doing a lot of reading.
Plus, like, right? Think about it. You go to a party and all he's seeing is subtitles everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's tough.
Yeah. All right, well, there you go. If you want your dumb superpower, if you like French toast or woodwind instruments, you can go to patreon.com/ifanboy. Sign up today. Get your dumb superpower. And listen, I know we're a little behind on rewards fulfillment. Past couple months have been very busy, but a huge batch of them are going out this weekend. So keep your eye out on them. Thank you to all patrons.
Pretty much Iron Fist's fault.
Yeah, I blame Iron Fist. So, all right, kicking things off, Josh, with the emails.
Kevin from Seattle, Washington, presumably. As a teacher, I'm looking at a little bit of well-earned free time here soon, and I was planning on spending a chunk of June-July rewatching Smallville. I know 2/3 of you were fans, he said, trying not to single out Josh for fear of shaming him publicly and the damage that it would do to his ego psyche. I don't care, I'm cool. And I'm curious how you think this show holds up, especially compared to the Berlanti Arrowverse shows on now. As a poorly aging hipster, don't cop my shit, dude. I'm always a sucker for heavy 90s emo pop soundtrack. Sixpence None the Richer, Phantom Planet, yes please. But I might be biased. Is it still a series you'd recommend to the youths out there, the youngins, or something's best left cast in the patina of the past? I probably haven't been thinking of this question as long as I should have. It's almost June, and I am oh so tired. 146 15-year-olds don't leave you with ever so much energy or free time just thinking. Well, they leave you with a little verbosity.
It's a patina.
It's patina, Josh. Are the things best left cast in the patina of the past?
I'm assuming he doesn't teach a writing class, because you got to cut this whole thing down.
Kevin. This is an interesting timeliness to this email, because about a month ago, I was on a flight, and I finished my book. And I have all the Smallville. When it ended, they gave you all the first season episodes for free on iTunes. So I downloaded them all. So I have all the first season. So I randomly rewatched the pilot not a month ago.
Okay.
And
I recently, for reasons that will become clear shortly, hopefully this summer, I recently watched the last episode of Smallville, the finale.
It was terrific.
It's fantastic.
Really, terrific.
Like, honestly, if Smallville was going on right now, even with the Berlantiverse and all the stuff like that that's going on, I think it would still be as strong or as good as that stuff. Like, it set the tone for all that stuff, and it maintained it. And, I mean, we watched it for 10 years, and I never wavered. I never questioned. It kept me going. It would be ridiculous, but those shows should be. It would be fun. It tapped into the lore of Superman really well. I give it a strong recommendation.
John Snyder, Annette O'Toole.
Yep,
Michael
good, great
Rosenbaum,
cast. Michael McKean every once in a while.
I'm just from the pilot. It was all there, and I still love that. Now, would I recommend it to the youths of today? I don't know what the fuck the youths of today like or want. If I did, I would make a lot of money as a consultant to all the Fortune 500 companies out there who are trying to figure that out. But I recommend it to people of our age, people who liked it. It's totally I'm kind of jealous you're rewatching it, to be honest with you. I actually thought about it after watching the pilot. It's still a great show.
Yep. So there you go. There's your recommendation. Kevin, I think you should watch it this summer. Go for it. All right. Up next is Andy from Australia, who says, besides reading comics, I found myself in recent times intrigued in reading more on the history of comics, on its evolution, and also what they mean. Are there any books that you can recommend on this? Have you guys read Seduction of the Innocents, considering it played such a big part in comic book history? Anyway, keep up the great work. So glad I ain't the only middle-aged man that still reads comics. Smiley emoji.
I'm seeing a trend here.
Yeah. no, but Josh, there's an obvious answer to this, right?
It's the
Fred Van Lente.
Oh, yeah, Comic Book Comics is probably the best one.
The Comic Book History of Comics, yes.
Okay. Did they change? They changed the title. It was originally Comic Book Comics, and then it became Comic Book History of Comics, I think.
When they collected it, and it was Book of the Month, it was the Comic Book History of Comics.
So, there's a series by Fred Van Lente, and who's the artist on that? I forget.
Ryan Dunleavy.
Yes, and they do a great journey through comic book history, and the Comic Book History of Comics. And they recently were republishing it in color version. And all that sort of stuff. But you can get it. You can get it on, you know, pretty much anywhere, Amazon or whatever. You get the whole collection or whatnot. But it will point you in other directions of things to read as well too. I think it's a good starting point at least.
My two favorite books, I guess, that I've ever read in that sort of genre. He didn't really specifically ask for comics, right? Was Tales to Astonish by Ronan Rowe, which is the story of Stan and Jack, but mostly on Jack. And then Tom Spurgeon and another author I don't remember wrote a book on Stan Lee. That was great.
That was the Rise and Fall of the American Comic Book.
Oh, and of course,
It's called Stan Lee, The Rise and Fall of the American Comic Book.
Sean, I can't remember his first name.
Oh, Sean Howe, Howe, the Untold, the Marvel
Comics. It's called Marvel Comics. Yeah.
Between all that stuff.
Between those three, I mean, it's very Marvel heavy, but that's where the most interesting things happened.
I would add in the Marvel side of things also Comic Wars, which was the book about the bankruptcy.
I would not recommend it. It's super heavy on business. It's not really what most people are looking for. There's not a lot of comic gossip. It's mostly about mergers and acquisitions and share price.
I enjoyed it. Because it gave context to what was going on in the 90s, I thought, which was good. Yeah,
but then you need to read the other stuff first.
Yeah. If you're interested in I wouldn't say read Seduction of the Innocent because that guy was a nut job. But if you're interested about that time period, read The 10-Cent Plague by David Hajdu. Which is basically all about that time period and what happened with Wortham and the Seduction of the Innocent.
I think we've discovered that there's a giant hole in a book to be written about DC.
Possibly.
Because there's been a lot of coverage on Marvel. I mean, obviously that's where
Schwartz, Carmine Infantino.
Stan and Jack period is in many ways encapsulates comics, but there's still a lot of stuff happened at DC. There's probably a really good story there, but someone has to write it.
Well, recently there's the is it Batman and Bill and Batman or Batman and Me? What's
Batman? But that was like a 30-page graphic.
I'm saying if you want that, there's that documentary available right now.
Batman Bill was a great little all ages graphic novel that came out that was basically laying out why Bill Finger should be listed as co-creator of Batman, which he has been now. And then they made a documentary about it, which I haven't watched yet. But it's that's also really interesting. I think there's a really interesting story to be told in that old DC stuff. Also, it's not true, but The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay takes place in the 60s amongst comic creators. Stan Lee is a character, but I think Bob Kane's a character.
Yes.
And so earlier than that, it also covers the pre-war era because they're in the war.
Yeah,
I haven't thought about that in a while.
But
it's fiction. It's fiction set in the real world, and it's just a joy to read anyway, period. So, But don't read Seduction of the Innocent. Read 10-Cent Plague instead.
I agree with you.
Steve from Maryland, of the iFanboy hosts, who are the best analogs for Barfly's Frasier, Cliff, and Norm? For example, clearly replacement host Paul Montgomery is the Kirstie Alley of the group. I've been thinking about this since the I'm Listening social media fiasco of 2017. And I think this Ron put this in because of that last line.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, also, I was curious to see where you guys met up. I mean, the casting of us in different casts, people like to play this game, West Wing, etc.
Well, just in case you're not 40 years old, he's talking about Cheers.
Yes. So if you had to, who is the Cliff? Who is the Frasier? Who is the Norm of the three of us?
Because we had a lot of people who wrote us after the Frasier thing saying, I don't know what you guys are talking about or who this person is, but here you go. So it's sad to me that one of the greatest sitcoms of all time is unknown to a certain group of people. However, let's dive into this. Josh is Cliff.
I 100% agree with you that you are Cliff. Yeah.
You are 100% Cliff.
How so?
in various ways, not the least of which is you are very keen on making sure everyone knows you know what's going on trivia wise.
Have you ever made a mistake factually in front of Ron Richards right there? Because he'll let you know.
I will cop to having Cliff-like tendencies, but if you had to say who of the three of us is Cliff, it's without a doubt it is you.
Yeah, I thought that immediately when I read this email.
Yeah, me too. All right, so then Connor, so that leaves Frasier and Norm.
You are Frasier more than Norm.
Yep, I agree.
That makes me Norm, which I think.
Which is exactly what I did. So now let's hear what Josh thinks.
I think I have Cliff tendencies more in the past, but I'm much more Norm now.
Norm?
I'm just sort of here. You know,
all right.
He makes jokes about his life.
This is becoming far more self-reflective than I wanted it to.
I don't know. It's not a good. I honestly, when I looked at it, I was like, I don't know that there's good analogs there, really.
Well, there's one that's exactly.
Yeah, Ron's not really Frasier in a bullseye, but he's Frasier adjacent.
The thing is, honestly, I personally believe I have aspects that are Cliff adjacent, Frasier adjacent, as well as Norm adjacent. But I think that if I had to choose one, I would probably be more.
Yeah,
Frasier.
You made the point. It's fine.
No, so.
Unless you're Woody.
No, I'm not Woody.
It's not a Woody.
All right. Well, that was
Can
a fun
I be
journey.
Carla?
No, you can't. You don't nearly have the aggression that Carla does.
That's true.
No one's afraid of you like afraid of Carla.
Yeah, he's like, Carla has much bigger balls than you
do.
The
people
I'm sorry,
behind
Josh.
Funko Strawberry Shortcake quake.
All right, so if you got a question or if you want to compare us to a TV show cast, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Be sure to include your name, where you're from, and how long you've been thinking about that question. And if you want, you can send an MP3 or an audio file, and we'll play it as a voicemail. That's always fun. Plug time.
Well, we did a Wonder Woman show because we saw Wonder Woman. We talked about it. All three of us were on it. It was a good time. Apparently, you guys also watched all of Iron Fist for some reason and talked about it, which exists in the feed already. And then by the time you listen to this, Wonder Woman will also be there. So those are both behind this show. It was not good, as I understand it.
I thought the discussion was really good. And Connor, the more I think about Iron Fist, the more I really would like just a solo Ward Meacham show still.
Iron Fist is a much more nuanced discussion than I think people were expecting based on the reaction when we posted it. And they were expecting a strawberry shortcake fest. Instead, they got a nuanced discussion of what worked and what didn't work.
Yep.
But both those shows were valid points.
Right behind us, the show on the feed. Check those out. Also behind those shows, Teen Titans, Judas Contract, the latest DC animated original film. Paul Montgomery, Ryan Haupt, and I got together to discuss it. We came out late because of, as Ron mentioned earlier in the show, this last couple of months have been crazy. But you can check that out. That was a solid entry into the line of films.
Indeed. And if you're looking for more podcasts to listen to, please go check out our sister show, the podcast I'm doing with our buddy Tom Merritt, Damn Fine Podcast, which is all about the TV show Twin Peaks. We watched the whole season one, season two, and Fire Walk with me and talked about them. You can go listen to them right now in the feed. And then every week we're posting immediately, as close to immediately as after a new part airs on Showtime. We are talking about it. So go sign up at damnfinepodcast.com. Get in on the Twin Peaks action. Hello.
Hello. Well, head over to ifanboy.com and hello. Find out all about those shows. They're all there at ifanboy.com. You can find all the old podcasts we've been doing. They're all available there. You can comment on them, whatever you like. Also, facebook.com/ifanboy and Twitter @ifanboy are where you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. You can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, at RonXO on Twitter and Instagram, and at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram.
If you like what we do here, you could write a review on iTunes or pretty much just there. All the other aggregators don't matter. But if there's a place to do another review and you want to do that, we're cool with that too. Better yet, even more important, it's telling your friends about us, sharing if you like shows. And people ask, we always notice when people say, like, what podcast should we listen to? People recommend iFanboy. I really appreciate that. And then someone invariably writes back, oh, I don't like that guy. No, that's not true.
It's usually always, Ron who says that.
This, yeah, you are our advertising arm, so thank you for that. And whenever you get the chance, please do so. And that is going to do it for this show.
Did you guys know that we have 1,150 ratings currently right now on iTunes?
Ratings.
1,150 exactly. That's amazing. So.
Didn't we make a push like forever ago to get to like 500?
We did. But we got a recent review as recently as a week ago said best comic podcast on the market.
Correct.
That's not good. We can't read these because they just go to Josh's head. So, although we did get a one star, and nice. The one star review says the title is Guardians 2.
Uh-oh.
And it says, did you guys even watch the movie? Awful on so many levels. This show has been going downhill for a while. Look elsewhere for better comic info. These so-called comic people don't know jack about comics. Amateurish at best.
Also true.
I love everything about that.
I love it. Me too. I love this guy. All right. Until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
Goodbye. Nami. Now, toll the bell and bid farewell to the great emancipator. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.